Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, LeVar Ball went on the record with, I believe it was Colin Cowherd, and said that Lonzo and Kuzma aren't that close. And Harrison's response to that was that, well, his dad doesn't really know who his closest friends are either. Are you going to stand for that kind of disrespect that from your internet son?
I just take it out on his mom when I can. So today's
going to be kind of a fun show. There's been a, like, I didn't want, there wasn't anything that's kind of happened in the last week or so that I wanted to focus an entire show around. So I thought we would let everything kind of group up. And we're going to focus on everything that's been kind of going on. There's the Lonzo and Kuzma rap beef that nobody knew that they wanted. Jeannie's Buss's really cryptic tweet. LeBron James odds. And then we'll kind of get into some of the LeBron James Jr. school stuff. We're going to get into draft rumors. Apparently the Lakers are all at the same time. And I got into this yesterday on the show. But at the same time, they are thinking about moving up. They've committed, or they've promised, that they were going to draft Herter. They are considering moving the pick to move Luol Deng's contract. So that 25 spot is going to be kind of a busy night, or a busy spot on a week from by the time we're recording this, or when we're recording this, a week from today. So there's a lot to get into. Let's just hurry up and jump into it. You guys know where to find the show. I've talked for way too long already. Pete, let's start with the Lonzo and Kuzma rap beef stuff. Our SBNation.com asked Silverscreen to put together like a brief history on where all this beef started, where all the bickering, public bickering, the trash talking, the shade throwing, that where all that started, and then kind of explain how we arrived here, where the Lakers had to step in and eventually tell both those guys, all right, that's enough is enough. How did you take like Lonzo's diss track, the father joke, and then eventually somebody within the Lakers, I'm thinking Magic Johnson, telling those guys to knock it off? How did you take everything that kind of went on with those two guys?
So to me, the only line that really matters, I mean, that should matter, I know this isn't how the real world works, but if Lonzo and Kuz are cool, I'm cool with it. It's none of my business.
Right.
Like, now, if there's a problem, so for me personally, if someone's made a lot, you know, like that would have been a line for me, right? Lonzo crossing that with the line about not knowing his dad. But that's me, right? I'm a 37-year-old white Puerto Rican dude, you know, that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That just barely scrapes by to pay his bills, right? That's his boy, right? And all of us have friends where we rag. I mean, I just busted on Harrison's mom, what, 2 minutes ago?
Literally two minutes ago.
That was probably poor phrasing, but we may have to tag this NC-17. So that may have demonstrated my point a little clearer than I intended to, but we all have.
We're 5 minutes into the show and it's off.
Time out. Oh, Harrison, I'm sorry.
I hope Harrison isn't listening to this. The point you were making is that who are we to judge what is crossing a line between two people whose friendship we don't really know anything about?
Yes, exactly. And that being said, perception matters in a way, right? And it was that particular thing, that line in particular, this has been escalating, and that line I think made everybody go, oh, is this a problem? Because that would be a problem for me, and not knowing if it is for Lonzo and Kuz. What I can say, being around them throughout the year, is they are legitimately really close. Like, their lockers are next to each other. They are ragging on each other all the time. It's not just for social media. I think that Kuzma had a line in his exit interview that I thought was telling, calling Lonzo 14 years old. And I think there's probably something to that. I think that Kuz is probably a little bit of a bigger big brother type character. Remember, Lonzo's the eldest in his family. Mm-hmm. And I think that there may be a little bit of that dynamic going on between the two of them. But so I don't think it was that big of a deal. I think it was – it's one of those things where the questions kind of fed into it. Like, it's almost like LeVar where, you know, like, does what LeVar say really have a big impact in the locker room? No, but does us as the media asking about it a million times have an effect? Yeah, it's probably kind of annoying. Yeah. I think that's probably what this was.
Yeah, I kind of got into it and I explained what I kind of took away from it. And to me, I thought everybody handled the situation as well as they could, or really well, just period, right? Where, okay, yeah, enough is enough. We do have higher priorities here in trying to acquire and convince LeBron James to come this upcoming summer. And the only issue that I took with the entire experience was some people, not going to name any names, Colin Cowherd, saying that somehow this was going to preclude LeBron James from signing in LA. Like, that to me was always kind of an asinine take. That if LeBron is really that annoyed by the immaturity or the perceived immaturity, then he would just ask those guys to be traded. And you have two of the more movable assets that might be made available on the market. You could get plenty back for those guys, and the Lakers would be fine, right? And there's some people out there who think that that might happen anyway. So
yeah, right. That has nothing to do with this, and I think that's a distinct possibility. You know, one of the rumors that's starting to percolate more and more is an interest in Damian Lillard, which mm-hmm. is, you know, like, if Lillard's coming in, you know, then Lonzo's probably one of the guys going out. So who knows? Like, all of it, this is going to be a wild, wild, wild summer, and there are so many different routes that they can take. And credit to them for giving themselves the flexibility to take those paths. But you're going to hear anything and everything, and how much a little, you know, boys talking crap to each other, escalating maybe a little bit beyond our comfort level. How much that going to matter, man? Nobody's going to care about that.
Right. We're going to take a quick second here, and we're going to stay in the social media category and talk about Jeannie Buss sending a little subtweet out there for the doubters, for the haters and the doubters. We'll get to that here in a bit. I should probably pull up Jeannie Buss's tweet here. All right, so I'm looking at it right now. It has, let's see. Yeah, it has 1,900 retweets. Now, it doesn't count. The quote tweets aren't counted here. But 1,900 retweets, like, I've heard several people say that that set Twitter ablaze or whatever it was. And I just – that seems like a low number to actually set Twitter ablaze. But it did get a lot of people speculating on what it means. You saw it. I'll just quote it right now. Do not ever underestimate ... Nothing else to say. When you first saw that tweet, now I did see you, you're the first response here. I'm so ready for whatever this means. But what were you thinking? This is a LeBron tweet, right? Like, we can talk about it being leather pants or whatever, as Ramona Shelburne reported today. But it's about LeBron. It's about Paul George. It's about the Lakers offseason.
I mean, there's no need to be cryptic about it if not, right?
Right. Like, otherwise, like,
you don't need to be cryptic about leather pants.
And Jeannie Buss also seems like the kind of person who, like, would take a selfie of the leather pants and be like, I didn't know I could pull these off. Look at that. You know, like, she seems like a lot of fun. And so, yeah, I completely agree. Why be cryptic if you don't necessarily have to be? And what's interesting, though, is that she sent that from Manhattan, New York. Turns out LeBron is also in New York. I especially enjoyed the leak to Ramona Shelburne that the Lakers are really concentrated on not tampering this time. I thought that was a fantastic little touch here. But this is all kind of lining up in a weird way, right?
Like, when you zoom out, it's easy and it's fun to talk about Jeannie's tweet or four entertainment sources and things like that, right? When you zoom out to big picture, all the winds are blowing in the right direction, right? Like, to me, that's my biggest takeaway. It's not any individual thing. It's just overall, look at the Vegas odds. You know what I mean? Like, people are starting to ask questions, and it seems to me they're getting certain answers that are all pushing it in the same direction. It ain't final until people's names are on the dotted line. But it does certainly seem that the wind is blowing a certain way.
Here's how I would kind of put it. The Lakers had their first hiccup in this entire process so far, right? With the Lonzo and Kuzma thing. That was the first, I guess, moment of, it's hard to say doubt because it's so early in the process, but that was the first kind of bump in the road. And that went over – it was everybody got over it really quickly. There was no hard feelings from anybody involved in anything, reportedly. And here we are again. And it just seems to – like the way I can kind of gauge how confident I should feel about LeBron James signing in L.A. is how annoyed people on Twitter seem to be by it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. The ruined childhood theory, right?
Right. Like the number of people – like I can't tell you how many different iterations of – oh, LeBron's going to go to the Lakers, and I hate this. This is so lame. Like the number of iterations of that type of sentiment out there that I have seen tells me, okay, I feel pretty good. And then Vegas seems to share that sentiment, right? It's and the thing I keep on coming back to, and you and I have talked about this a bunch, but the Lakers are coming off of 35 wins. It's insane. It's crazy how all this is playing out. You had an interesting tweet the other day, though, where you said that, you know, it feels like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I hope that light isn't a train. One, we don't need to get into the sacrifice and the rituals and all that stuff. But but it really does feel like that light seems pretty promising.
Man, I'm so set up for disappointment. I know I am. I know. I'm just that point just passed too long ago. Like, it's pointless to fight it at this point. So I'm just going to be like really optimistic because there's nothing that I could do to bring myself back to being grounded. But like what those sorts of things that you're talking about other people being upset about it, to me, that feeds the beast for me, where it's like, I'm not just in this echo chamber of Laker fans where we're all trying to speak it into existence, right? It's something that other teams fans are like, damn it, you know, and they're lamenting the increasing possibility of this all actually going down. So yeah, for me, that makes me even more excited.
All right, we're going to take another quick second here. When we come back, we'll get into we're going to try to handle this LeBron James Jr. stuff. We'll only spend a second on it, and then after that, we'll get into the draft, which is somehow, by the time everybody is listening to this, less than a week away. Pete, can you believe that the finals ended like 6 days ago?
It's funny because the finals felt like this, yeah, let's get this over with. get on to like the real exciting part, right?
Exactly. So when we come back, though, we're going to talk about this school situation. Both Pete and I have a little bit of experience in dealing with schools and that sector of society. So we'll add our two cents to that and I want to talk about some of the reporting and how people are handling that. We'll get to that here in a second. All right, so I just want to start here. I want to put two cents in here before we get into it and go any further. But I feel a little weird when we start involving players' families and players' kids.
LeBron James, right there with you, brother. Right there with you.
LeBron James Jr. is 13 years old, man. He didn't ask to be LeBron James' kid. He didn't, you know, yes, he is blessed by all the benefits of LeBron's career and the money and all that, but he didn't ask for any of that. And I feel really iffy when we start getting into the territory of journalists calling or people calling schools to see where this kid might be showing up. I just it's getting into that kind of shady area where let's get back to the fun stuff. Let's leave the families alone. There's plenty of meat on the bone where we don't have to go there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you start getting into I hope that that's the creepiest thing that's done between now and the resolution of all of this, wherever it may be. But something tells me that it's not. We have not reached peak Twitter stalking quite yet, I don't think.
Is there anything – so the thing with the schools is that, one, we aren't going to get confirmation from the school. They literally cannot offer up that information. So I don't see why people are trying to dig there. And the other thing, too, is like when LeBron was playing in Miami, I believe his family was still in Cleveland. So it's not even a – there might not even be a direct correlation between where LeBron James Jr. goes to school and where LeBron James winds up actually playing, right? And it feels like a subject that we should probably leave alone on its own merits. But when you get into the fact that it might not have as big an impact as some people might seem to think, then it really feels extremely fruitless. So go ahead.
I guess the two things that I would say to that is that it would be strange to uproot them, and like him going to Sierra Canyon and then LeBron staying in Cleveland, that seems like very unlikely, mm-hmm. right? Or him going to a different city. Like, it seems like he would probably just stay where he's grown up all of this time, LeBron yeah. Jr., that is. Then secondly, did you see the Scottie Pippen video on the jump the other day?
I did not, no. Although I did hear that he didn't exactly...
he basically confirmed it, Anthony. Like, yeah. And Rachel Nichols was trying very hard to be like, hey, you know, if you want to shoot this down. And she gave, and very wisely so, the same disclaimer, right, about like, this is getting into inappropriate media, you know, ethics in doing this. But Scottie Pippen's kid plays on the team at Sierra Canyon. And so that was the reason they brought it up. And Pippen was like, nothing's official yet. And then later in the segment, she was like, well, this is an opportunity for you to shoot that down. And he said, I wish I could. And so Pippen all but confirmed that. So I do think, again, zoom out, not just the Sierra Canyon thing, but just all of it, right? The wind seems to be blowing in the same direction.
Yep, I completely agree. We're going to segue over to stuff that's actually – we might actually get some clarification on in the next week or so. The LeBron thing – all right, I do want to ask you this. Do you think this gets resolved quickly? Because I can go either way on this.
That's a really good question. I don't think it drags on to like late July or anything. I don't think it'll be a 1201 type thing either. You know, I think there's going to be one thing that I do think is certain, and Maverick Carter spoke to this about a year back, is that they're going to make a production out of it, right? The first time when he left for Miami, it was the ESPN program. The second time, it was the piece with Lee Jenkins. Neither time, it didn't happen July 1st, 2nd, 3rd, something like that. Maverick Carter's talked about putting it on Uninterrupted, which is one of their shows.
That's what I was thinking.
And doing that. So there is going to be some degree of spectacle and hype and build up, even more so than we already have before things are officially announced. That said, I think it's going to be hard to keep that bottled up. And if they can do that, I'll be impressed.
Doesn't he have a TV show on like Showtime? Or didn't he have a show on Showtime at one point that, like, he wasn't in it or anything, but he was a part of, like, the producing team LeBron is?
Yeah, Spring Hill Entertainment's had a couple of – they've had a couple of shows and movies that they've been involved in. And, yeah, so one of which, again, if you – I mean, I don't know if it's a show or not or if they're just saying they've moved their production to L.A. But if you go on Spring Hill Entertainment, I think that's the site. If you go on there and to the about page, the big letters, it's Akron to L.A., right? That could just mean the production company. But, you know, in context of everything else, just look where the wind's blowing, baby. That's all.
The reason I brought up like a TV show that he's on, like if they were having ratings problems or if like Showtime really wanted to milk a few extra subscriptions or whatever, couldn't he just say that, like – on the fifth episode of the upcoming season of whatever show that we have on here, LeBron James, you will find out by way of this show and only by way of the show where LeBron will be signing. Like, I feel like the opportunity is standing right there.
I think that's basically what they're going to do. I don't think it'll be on an existing show, but I think it'll be through their Uninterrupted.
Yeah. All right. So the reason I think it'll get resolved quickly is because there's so many moving pieces that have to come with him, right? Like if he wants to team up with Paul George, if he wants to team up with any other superstar, like those are calibrations that the team that he's going to will have to figure out relatively quickly and relatively soon in the off season, and you don't want, you know, somebody kind of hanging out there to dry while he figures out how he wants to make this announcement, because that's a potential teammate. And not just the stars, but also, like, if he comes to the Lakers, right, he's basically going to be trying to build a championship contender on the fly as soon as he gets here. And so if you're doing that, well, then now you're talking about role players that probably need to figure things out as well. And that goes beyond the superstar that he would probably like to play with. The Lakers have their own guys that they want to retain, if it's Julius Randle, or they need to figure that out as well. So I think, given, you know, with Miami, I think there was so much to be worked with, and him and Wade and Bosch had figured out what they wanted to do. It seemed like going into that offseason, going back to Cleveland, you know, all that they really needed to do, right, was that Kevin Love trade with Andrew Wiggins, and then they kind of built the team over the course of his prime seasons. Whereas, like, here, he's going to be trying to compete in a very short time frame, and if he wants to do that to the fullest extent, I feel like he has to. Those are all things that he needs to do in a relatively short period of time. Would you roll with that theory?
To me, yes. And to me, that speaks to the incentive that they would have to figure things out ahead of time.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's very plausible that this is all, not all of it, maybe the team building around it, right? And I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if LeBron and Paul George were to come to the Lakers for exactly the reasons that you stated, it'd be in their best interest to let the Lakers know that ahead of time so they can do things like move Luol Deng and use the draft to help do that, do the team building, any other trades, if Lillard really is available and if that's out there, to make those phone calls that are not settled. It's all the more reason to, you know, send things through back channels so that they can get a head start on those things to put LeBron and Paul George in the best situation possible.
So what you're saying is this is where the KCP signing really pays off.
Maybe. I mean, they've been sitting next to Rich Paul. Magic's been sitting next to him all year.
Yeah.
At Laker games, him and Pelinka, right? And I mean, I don't know, man. You know, Mitch Kupchak always had the reputation of being a Boy Scout. They called at 12:01 p.m. If Magic, Rich Paul, and Rob Pelinka are in the same room at the Lakers facility, and he's got every reason to be there because KCP's on the team, and they're in a room, you don't think LeBron James comes up? Like, let's be real here.
Leather pants, Pete.
Leather pants. They discuss leather pants. Yes.
All right. We kind of briefly alluded to the draft. I do want to get to some of this stuff. So the rumors so far are everywhere and anywhere between, right? And I feel like, and this is what I wrote yesterday in one of the articles that I put together, that draft night's going to be pretty telling. I'll let you build on that because I believe you seem to agree with that point. I'll let you build on that point because I've done so much talking today.
No, I just think that if the Lakers do know what's going on, the draft provides them opportunities to – like moving a 2018 pick is more valuable to a team than a 2019 pick or a future pick. One of the things I think we forget is that GMs are not necessarily motivated for the super long term of a team, right? Like, it might be really smart to say, you know, as another team, or you have a good idea that LeBron and Paul George are coming to the Lakers, right? And you can also be like, all right, let's add 5 years to that. And Lakers probably are on a downswing at that point, or somewhere around there. So let's trade for a 2023 first rounder because that's going to be good. Well, that GM has no guarantee of having a job in 2023, mm-hmm. right? And so the farther out that you get, the less valuable that those picks become. So the ability to flip a 2018 type of pick. Now, I think it's less likely that the Lakers do flip Deng on draft day. I think it's a possibility, but I do think that they actually have legit prospects that they are interested in, and I think that just kind of a straight ahead draft at 25, 47 is more likely, but the Deng option is out there.
I mostly agree. I think you can look, Deng's contract is not nearly as cumbersome as it was last season, right? We're only a year away from it becoming an asset, as you have said previously. And so, like, this concept that the Lakers would have to include top-end lottery talent to move it is patently false. they needed to include top-end lottery talent to move Mozgov's deal, which had an extra year on it. This idea that they have to do that with Deng is not quite leaning up or lining up for me logically. And so what the Lakers are kind of able to do is they have the ability now to kind of sit back and play this thing out. And for teams that are going to be looking for a little additional cap flexibility, when all of those 2016 deals that were offered up in that fateful summer start coming off the books. Well, if you're a team that really wants to completely hit the reset button, well then Deng becomes an actual asset there. And so I agree with you there. How did you take this news about Kevin Huerter receiving a promise from the Lakers at 25?
I jumped and clicked my heels together. I love that kid. I'm a big fan of his game, and I don't think he's going to be there at 25, even with the hand surgery that he just had. You know, I don't think he'll be there, but he would be. And I have heard rumblings that the Lakers like him, so that is aligned with things that I've heard. So I would be thrilled to have him available. That kid can shoot. He can he can handle the ball a little bit. He's a good passer for an off-ball shooter type of guy. Like, if all of these bigger moves happen, he's a really good young player to be able to put alongside a LeBron, a Paul George, guys like that. And he can defend a bit too.
Yeah, that's the key here, is that, like, if the Lakers do somehow wind up with Huerter, that's one of those kind of telling moments to me, that he fits a need, an absolute necessity that you have alongside LeBron James. Now, it's an absolute necessity you need, period, but especially when you have somebody like LeBron coming in, because he needs as much space as you can possibly get. Like, the only way that I walk away from draft night, I guess, bummed, for lack of a better term, is if they do wind up taking on salary, because that means, like, those wins that we have been talking about all episode, those ones will have changed. If they wind up taking on salary for an additional asset down the line, that probably isn't a great sign.
And which is all the more reason why, like, the Zaire Smith rumor came out yesterday or the day before. That is a big part of the reason why, is like, you're not going to be giving up assets that you may need to move Deng down the line, mm-hmm. if before you even shoot your shot. Like, it'd be a great plan B, but plan B can't be plan B if the timing of it happens before plan A. And that's what happens here, right? So I think they're interested in Huerter and a guy like that. I think, like, they need a guy like that, whether they get LeBron or not. So I think that he fits kind of either any version of the future that they would like. He's a guy that I think that I don't think they'd move up for him, but they'd love to have him slip to 25.
I have a question here for you on iTunes. Are you ready for? I told you I was going to prepare you for it, but I forgot until this very moment. Are you ready?
Let's roll.
All right. So this is from Nick Batchelor. He says, "Aloha, Pete." From Nick, "Aloha, Pete. Love how you love the Lakers. This question is for you. Who would win a series of seven if the Lakers played themselves as the team is, but with the addition of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard against the Lakers team, but with LeBron and Chris Paul? If you had to pick, which would you rather have, George and Leonard or James and Chris Paul?" And this is, you and I talked about this before the show, that, like, Chris Paul and LeBron seem a little closer to guys who would want to play together than, you know, LeBron and Paul George, who don't really have much in common as NBA players typically do. But go ahead and answer the question.
Cool. Well, thank you for the question, Nick. I appreciate it, man. I'm going with LeBron. I think that you got, you know, the best player on the court around, surrounded by similar talent. I don't think him and CP3, I don't think their games fit together as well as Kawhi and Paul George's do. But I think that at the end of the day, I think in basketball, it's funny. We talk so much and we put out so much content and all that. But what are the last decade or two decades come down to in terms of you win championship with LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal, Dwayne Wade? You know, like, you're talking like some of the best guys of all, Tim Duncan, guys like top 20 players of all time. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are really good, and Kawhi's already been the best player on a championship team. But to me, like, you keep it simple, stupid, right? You take the best player of the bunch, and that's LeBron.
Nick, Pete didn't just call you stupid. He's referring to he's referring to Harrison as per usual. I agree, and I do kind of disagree about LeBron James and Chris Paul's games. Like if LeBron is willing to be a screener in the pick and roll, and I think that's kind of the next stage in his career is being, you know, being more of the screener, and you know, you open yourself up to a little bit different kind of punishment there. But if Chris Paul is handling the ball in a pick and roll with LeBron James as a screener, and you have enough shooting around them, like, good luck.
Yeah, and that's actually a really great point. And hopefully some pod down the line we will be discussing LeBron's positionality with the Lakers. Mm-hmm. We can save that for another time perhaps. But to further your point, the league's switching those more and more, right? And you're switching, like, that's a damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario. Chris Paul's great at breaking down those bigs that switch onto him. And then, yeah, LeBron, we've seen it time and time again, switched onto those smaller players, right? So that's something I always kind of lament. I wish Kobe was part of the switching era because he was scoring an ISO at around 1 point per possession against your Shane Battiers and Bruce Bowens and whatnot. Would have loved to see some little dude or freaking Kevon Looney trying to stick onto him, right? But, you know, hey, those days are gone. But yeah, I could definitely see that. And I do see LeBron transitioning more to a full-time four and small ball five even as his career goes on.
Yeah, and he's skilled enough to do it. Like, that's the – you know, when I hear Laker fans talk about, oh, this guy – you know, when are we going to be concerned about his age? When are we going to be concerned? Like, what big injury might be coming down the line? Like, you can't really plan for injuries, one. And two, this guy is so skilled. He is so strong. He is so smart that his next chapter of his career is going to be – it won't be as explosive, but it will be, I would say, not – if his current situation, if he's a 10 in terms of productivity – and you can get like an 8.5 out of that, and I think that's really possible with what his next chapter of playing style is going to look like, then you're still getting great value on LeBron James, by the way.
Yeah, right. And can I – we didn't touch on this. This is probably a point that we could expound on in a different show. But my like perfect scenario would be LeBron and Paul George coming and then – Dang getting traded with a couple of picks so we can keep Julius. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because I don't think it's going to work out that way. I think a couple of guys are going to get traded. But part of the reason that's my preferred scenario is when LeBron goes from being a 10 to an 8.5, that'll be the point where the young guys go from 4s to 7s, right? Mm-hmm. And from 5s to 8s. Guys like that, to where, to me, that's a really long championship window that mitigates the fact that LeBron's going to be 34 in December. I still think a 36-year-old LeBron is going to be a really good player, like really, really top-end all-star type player. Maybe not the best player in the game, but you can make up for that if some of the guys around them are better than they were and just starting to enter their prime. So that's what I'm hoping for in along the same lines of what you're talking about.
Yep, I completely agree. I think it's a choice between do you want the window to be wider in terms of margin for error over a shorter period of time, or do you want a longer time span in which that championship window is open? And that's kind of the decision that they're going to have to make this offseason. Yep. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. This was a fun Friday edition. I am not going to be on the Locked On NBA show for tomorrow's or for when everybody's listening to this on a Friday show. But what we are doing is a really cool mock draft concept. We did this last year. People loved it. I put in my pick, but you know, it was kind of reluctantly. I'll get to that when I get to explain my pick. I'm not going to spoil it though, so you guys have to go check out those shows as they happen. Thank you, Pete, for hopping on with me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
It was a fun one, brother.
Have a great weekend, everybody.